One of the great Supreme Court cases on the expansion of freedom and justice in America that Professor Jeffrey Rosen didn't mention is in full force at Gitmo and is 50 years old this year. That case is Gideon versus Wainwright, and it requires that an attorney be supplied to every defendant with the costs borne by the state. The Gideon case, which began when a Florida convict hand-wrote a letter to the U.S. Supreme Court, it ended up creating the U.S. public defender system. Access to state-appointed attorneys is now a principle recognized worldwide. But to our next guest, a public defender herself, justice is still a street fight up against a system that is stacked in favor of prosecutors. Robin Steinberg is the executive director of the Bronx Defenders, a public defender's office and legal services organization in the South Bronx, a place that ironically has been the inspiration for numerous courtroom dramas, but Steinberg says is no movie set.
The criminal justice system in 2013 is not the good wife. Very little goes on in the trial world in the criminal justice system. In the state system, about 2% of cases get tried. Somewhere between 2 and 5% get tried. 95% or more get plea bargained.
What's the most outrageous deal you've ever heard of in this very improvisational system?
Well, to give you a sense of how important a plea of any kind is to the prosecutor side, we had a client once who was charged with murder. We refused to take a plea. We kept marking it down for trial. And over the course of 2 years, the offer came down and down and down until eventually they offered a misdemeanor. Our public defender in the Bronx Defender's Office turned down the misdemeanor and said, how many times do we have to tell you? He wasn't there. He's not guilty. He's completely innocent of this charge and we're not taking a plea. They then offered us a disorderly conduct, which is not even a misdemeanor. It's a violation. And we turned it down and then they dismissed the case. But that's how strong the pressure to get any kind of plea out of a case and out of a human being is in the system these days.
So, you know, we talk in the justice system about this core value that underlies everything that's going on here, that the mission is to blank, you know, fairness, lofty philosophical kinds of stuff. What is the value, though, that drives this impulse to get a plea at all costs?
The only value there can be is efficiency. You know, the system, the state system is overloaded with people coming into the system, mostly charged, by the way, with minor misdemeanors at this point. So there is just under-resourced in every way, right? Judges are under-resourced, court parts, prosecutors, defenders, and you couldn't possibly have trials on all these cases. And so what happens is the pressure to plead guilty becomes incredibly intense. Everybody gets mad when you don't want to take a plea and you insist upon a trial. And when you insist upon a trial, at least in New York City in state court, you will have to wait anywhere from a year to 3 years to get your case to a trial. That means appearing in court every 3 weeks or every 4 weeks. That means sitting in jail if you can't afford bail, waiting for that case to get to trial and finally get your day in court. So it's hard to actually find what the core value is anymore in the criminal justice system.
And you've done this for, what, like 30 years?
30 years, yeah.
I mean, I hesitate to say you've seen everything, but
I've certainly seen a lot.
What do defendants bring with them when they come into the system? I mean, I suspect they're coming with an image of the criminal justice system that maybe involves, you know, two parts Law and Order, one part The Wire. What do you have to surprise them with when they discover what's really going on?
I think that our clients coming into the criminal justice system are quite well aware of what's going on and what the criminal justice system is being used to do. I mean, in all candor, the criminal justice system in these days, at least in New York City and in most urban areas, are processing people for misdemeanors. The police are targeting poor communities and particularly poor communities of color. And people have a very good sense of what's going on in the criminal justice system. They're being stigmatized.
So it's only people like me that have illusions about it. In the communities where this takes place, everybody understands what's going on.
I think there's a deep understanding of the function that the criminal justice system these days is playing, right? As we have watched zealous policing, zero tolerance policing, broken windows policing take over poor communities of color in the city. People are very aware whether or not they're being brought into the system as a quote-unquote defendant or whether they're just an observer. Everybody knows that the criminal justice system has reached very, very wide and very, very far into their communities. Leveling the playing field is simply impossible. Defender offices across this country are under-resourced. Prosecutors' offices, quite frankly, are under-resourced. Everybody's under-resourced in the criminal justice system. And so there's not really a leveling of the playing field. What you really have is the defender is the one person who stands up beside the person charged with a crime and speaks on his or her behalf and tries to put in context what the charge is and that particular act and tries very, very hard to fight against an entire system that is attempting to define that person in his or her entirety by that act. So we're the people sort of saying, look, even if this happened, let's look at the context. Let's look at this person's humanity. Let's look at their personal life. Let's look at their family. Let's look at their community, with the hope that we can find some mitigation, that we can convince people to respect people's humanity and dignity through the process, and can arrive at something that feels relatively fair.
Do you resent people like me and others, you know, talking about level playing fields and making these abstract kinds of statements about the criminal justice system working?
I don't resent it. I get frustrated sometimes by it. I get enraged a little bit by it. But at the end of the day, the value that we sort of really hope to hold is to educate the public about what's really going on in the criminal justice system. And I recognize that for people that live in more affluent communities, this is off the radar screen, that it's hard to believe. Most people that I tell these stories to find it hard to believe.
So people talk about slippery slopes, but you see just a big ledge and a drop-off.
I see a ledge and a drop-off in lots of ways in the criminal justice system. I mean, the thing that's most bizarre in some ways to me is for the past 20 years you have watched crime drop significantly in New York City and, frankly, across this country. And yet you see arrest numbers continue to go up. You would have expected to see the downsizing of prisons, the downsizing of jails, the downsizing of public defender offices, prosecutors' offices, and courthouses. And instead what you see is they have replaced arresting people who are charged with crime with really charging people with criminalization of behavior that's only criminalized in certain neighborhoods. By that I mean graffiti, trespass, sitting on a stoop and drinking a beer. Those are the kinds of things now that people are getting picked up for in certain communities, but not in other communities.
So I'm going to magically transform myself from the naive person who doesn't really understand what's going on the front lines, as you see it, to a judge. I give you the power to pluck somebody from the system over the last 30 years that if you had the power, you could just pull them out and send them on their way. Is there someone you would do? You would pluck from the system? You would reach in and get?
There are thousands and thousands of people that I would pluck from the system. I think there are thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands of people whose cases never should have been brought at all, where the behavior that's been criminalized could have been resolved in a different way. You see it particularly in school-age high school kids. The fight in the playground between two kids that in my generation would have been resolved with a principal and a parent being called in, or a principal and a caregiver being called in, the police get called. Writing on a desk in school, which I have to admit, and probably on advice of counsel I shouldn't, I did as a child all the time. Writing on a desk in a public school in a neighborhood like the South Bronx can result in an arrest for criminal mischief, and we see those cases all the time. And that experience affects your life, particularly if you're a young person. Yes, there's the stigmatizing of a criminal conviction or the actual ramifications and collateral consequences of a conviction that could happen to you and your family. But the experience of being thrown up against a wall, being handcuffed, being talked to in a rough and vulgar way by the police, being thrown into the back of a car, taken to a precinct, locked in a cage, held there, brought underground to a criminal courthouse, sitting downstairs for 24 hours in a bullpen with 20 other men charged with anything from disorderly conduct to murder. That experience is not benign. That experience can really sear your soul and can, I think, affect particularly for young people the way they see themselves and the way they think the world sees them.
I have a 14-year-old daughter who very recently said with some real conviction, you know, what I want to do, Dad, is be a public defender.
That's awesome.
I know. It occurs to me to ask you, what tough lesson is she going to learn if she, you know, showed up at your office tomorrow?
She's going to learn that our society uses the criminal justice system in really onerous and destructive ways. She's going to see that it's unfair, grossly unfair. She's going to see that racism and classism basically permeate every single element of the criminal justice system in this country. She's going to see a lot of heartbreak, a lot of hardship. She's going to see poverty in ways that she's probably never seen it before. That having been said, she will see the incredible vibrancy and the incredible collaborative spirit of a community like the South Bronx. She'll see the clients who will come in and share their intimate stories and details with you, who you will frankly fall in love with and want to protect and want to help and want to stand in front of and want to empower to make their own decisions about what's important to them. And so there's a lot of hope in there too that she'll see.
For 30 years, you've been working in a system that you believe where the deck is stacked against you, yet you say you're lucky.
incredibly lucky. I can't imagine doing any job that fulfills you the way that it does, that inspires in me the kind of passion that I feel for justice. It is a job that gives you way more than you're ever going to give it. And I feel like I've been lucky for 30 years to have that experience. I would recommend it to your daughter. I'd recommend it to anybody's daughter or son. We need more public defenders. We need more passionate people doing public defense. We need more people willing to look at the harsh realities of the criminal justice system and to really continue to get it out there into the world so that people like you and like other people who live in different kinds of communities and do different kinds of work really begin to understand and take it on as their own personal mission as well.
Robin Steinberg, Executive Director of the Bronx Defenders. Thanks so much.
Thank you.